Dan Menning back with you here on The Fan, rolling into the 10 o'clock hour. And rolling into the 10 o'clock hour, we go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline for a great friend of the program. He is Doug LaMaurice of Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. He is in the middle of his awesome series of the 25 decisions that transformed the Cleveland Browns. Doug, welcome to the program, man.
Thanks for having me back.
Hey, oh, you know you're always welcome here. Trust me, you have saved this show more times than you can count. So
I doubt that's true, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Well, I've been digging this series. I've been really enjoying the fact you've been doing these 25 decisions. Your one today, the spinning DeShone Kizer into Demaryius Randall, a move that I remember at the time going like, wow, this is kind of a smart move for the Packers. They're going to buy low on some guy who, you know, has shown a little bit of promise and could sit behind Aaron Rodgers, and maybe Mike McCarthy can wake up from the nap that he's taking and develop. And the Browns get a guy in Demaryius Randall who's been miscast. Like, this is a win-win. I don't see the downside.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that that why I think that move stood out to me is that once they got DeShone Kizer's rookie year over here, he just didn't have a place here anymore, right? They figured out he's not the guy in Cleveland. So he's a wasted pick. He's a wasted second-round pick. And to turn that into a guy who is now like a foundational piece on the defense, is going to get an extension here. He's only 26 years old. They finally got Demaryius Randall into the position that he always wanted to play on the NFL at free safety. I like his attitude. I like him as a guy. I like him as a player. That's why I thought that was such a good move, because, you know, as I wrote in there, a lot of the stuff that John Dorsey has done is turning good opportunities into good players, right? Like, they had the number one pick. He made a good pick with Baker Mayfield, but I think he got Demaryius Randall for basically an asset that was dead to the Browns and turned nothing into something. So I get the idea that maybe DeShone Kizer down the road is something for somebody else, but he wasn't going to be that here in Cleveland. So to get an impactful player like Randall is just a tremendous move.
And it's so interesting because you read your whole series here and just the headlines alone, and I've been reading it along the way too, but like, attitude is the biggest thing that stands out on all of these. I mean, number 8, Jarvis Landry instilling an attitude. Number 9, banking on Joel Bitonio, setting the attitude of that offensive line. Number 10, sticking to Joe Schobert in the middle of the defense. Again, a face of that attitude that John Dorsey wanted. It really is attitude and getting rid of that losing mess that was in here for so long, Doug. I mean, that's, at least to me, that's what's standing out.
I might disagree, if
okay.
I may.
We'll allow it this time.
I think it's easier to have a good attitude when you have more good players. So I understand the idea of a culture change here, and I know that that's been important to John Dorsey. But, you know, the reason they went 1-31 isn't because they had guys with bad attitudes. It's because they had bad players, you know. So, you know, I do believe now, to your point, what Jarvis Landry brought with sort of his work ethic and like not settling for mediocrity and that kind of thing. We saw that is important, but it also is more important now that he has Odell Beckham in his room and that Antonio Callaway and Rashard Higgins have some talent as young receivers and David Njoku and they have a quarterback who can throw to him. The culture change, really, you change the culture when you get more good players. So I do agree that Randall and Landry, especially to me, do stand out as guys who their attitude is part of it. But if they weren't surrounded by other good players, their attitude wouldn't matter, right? That the attitude is, to me, you know, the cherry on top of the sundae. But I think what the 25 moves are showing is that just piece by piece, player by player, talent by talent, position by position, they really do have an across-the-board foundation here that I think is – fans realize it, but I thought it was worth revisiting.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you're saying as well. And I think you're right on that one, that it really does boil down to talent. And, I mean, I'll forever also point at getting a coach who's in here who knows how to utilize that talent in the mm-hmm. correct method and not what
sure.
was previously here. So it does all build onto itself, and I think it's definitely with Jarvis Landry. You see the talent, you see the attitude, and it starts rubbing off on the younger guys, and then the younger guys want to start working harder. And I think the talent really does build it, but the attitude can only help, and it can only help that locker room.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes, of course you would. You want this kind of attitude rather than the other. But now the other thing, and this is an interesting point. The Packers, part of the reason they wanted to get rid of Demaryius Randle is because they thought he had a bad attitude.
Right.
Jarvis Landry, one of the reasons Miami didn't want to pay him and sign him is because he was getting in fights with his coaches, with Adam Gase, and that they thought he might have had an attitude problem. So, you know, one, it's how you look at things, but I think what those guys have is a kind of passion that when you win is the attitude you want. Now, if for some reason this does not start well, and they think Freddie Kitchens is making bad decisions, or they think some of their other teammates aren't working hard, then maybe their attitude won't be what you want. But it seems like to me what Randall and Landry both do is demand a level of competency and work ethic from their teammates. And then when they're on bad teams, same with Odell. If you think Odell Beckham has a bad attitude, it's because his quarterback stinks. That's what I think. And I think his attitude is going to be great here because he's going to be surrounded by good players. So I do think they have some critical guys here who have a good attitude to help a team win, but maybe if you're not winning, then people have a different view of that attitude.
And that's how everything is in life. I mean, there's a ton of different places where I'm sure you've worked and I've worked as well, where the talent at the people at the head are sailing it in the wrong direction, and you know that, and you want to help it get in the right direction, and you just can't sit here in the muck. Instead, you have to speak up and say, dude, we're doing this wrong. We have to do it this way, and that way we'll win. And I think that's what you saw in Odell Beckham, and I think that's what you saw in Demaryius Randle, and that's what you saw in Jarvis Landry, because if you notice, all of those guys where they came from were out of bad situations. Miami was a mess with Adam Gase there. He just never worked. And Mike McCarthy should have been fired 4 years ago. Trust me, I watch every Packer game. I'm a huge Green Bay Packers fan. I would have canned him 4 years ago. And you can say the same thing with Pat Shurmur and with the Giants. And so you bring these guys in who are like, this is not right. What is taking place here is wrong, and get them in a right situation. And you're 100% right. It's going to go well. And that's why I have as much faith as you do. And you keep saying 12 wins, 12 wins. And when I first heard that, I was like, I'm worried about Doug. Is he okay? Did something happen? And then I watch this stuff take place, and I'm like, all right, I could talk myself into 10, maybe 11, and maybe they'll win something they don't deserve to, and that puts them at 12.
Yeah, no, it's like it's all there. And the one thing that part of this, and I hope it's sort of my answer to the people who, and you just get them on Twitter, and I love interacting with people on Twitter and in the comments and stories and stuff that just keep saying, like, whoa there, buddy, slow down, 12 wins, hey, this is the Browns. And to me, if your reason that you think they're not going to win 12 games is because they're the Browns, that's not a debate. That's not a rational thing that, like, well, they were bad in 2006. And so that doesn't matter. This is the way the NFL works. Teams flip it quickly. So the past, the Browns' past, what their record was 2 years ago has nothing, zero, to do with whether they can win 12 games this year. It is only an analysis of talent and schedule. That's it. If you want to analyze that and debate whether they can win 12, then fine. If any part of your debate is the past, it's wrong. That is not the way this league works. Look at what the Rams did. Look at teams through the years who have flipped it in 2 years from the bottom of the league to the Super Bowl. So if you look at the roster and if you read all these 25 moves, tell me they can't do it. It's not a guarantee, but tell me it's impossible. Look at the 25 and tell me it's impossible. It's far from impossible. It's all right there.
He is Doug LeMaurice of Cleveland.com. He joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, so I got a thought experiment for you. You ready for this? I'm going to make you think this morning. I apologize.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Would you be open to the idea of trading back into the first round to take a guy with a torn ACL as a redshirt year? Do you like that idea, or is that a nay?
So, like, I had a 25-minute conversation with my boss yesterday about the idea of redshirting and wanting to write a column about that. Because guess who already redshirted for the Browns? Austin Corbett.
Yeah.
They redshirted the first pick in the second round last year, and it allowed them to install him as a starter this year and flip the guy ahead of him into a pass rusher. So I think possibly the idea of redshirting is right where I am with the Browns right now. And obviously you're specifically talking about Jeffrey Simmons and the injury that would lead you to do that. But I think they could, if they stay where they are in the second round, I think that might be what they do anyway. I don't know that if they stay at 49 that the linebacker or the cornerback or the tackle that they take there is going to start this year or even play very much this year. But if you're telling me at 49 you're taking Greg Robinson's replacement for 2020 or Christian Kirksey's replacement for 2020 because you're going to get a young, cheaper guy so you don't have to pay an older guy, so you can save your salary cap room to sign your young foundational players, I think redshirting is the way to go right now for them. And so to go up to get Jeffrey Simmons to redshirt him, I'm a little wary of the price to move up. I'm all about all in. I love the Beckham trade. I love everything John Dorsey has done this offseason. If you didn't think he was going to go all in, you were nuts. This is the window. Go for it now. However, I don't want them to completely mortgage future drafts. So their first-round pick this year is Odell Beckham. That's the best first-round pick out there. So the fact they don't have a first-rounder is fine. Nobody should get wound up about that. I'm wary of the cost for Simmons. The idea I think I'm okay with. I don't know what it would cost. If it would, like, what would it cost to get them from 49 into the first round to get them? Are you giving up next year's first rounder? What's the cost, do you think? Tell me the cost.
I mean, I'm trying to think. So what was it? The Saints moved up last year with their first rounder and moved up to get Davenport, and they used their first rounder from this year. So the Packers are drafting at 30 as well as 12. So I'm thinking that might be what it would have to be. I mean, and that's moving from the low first round up. So maybe it would be next year's one, and I'm kind of with you. If that's going to be my – if that's the cost, then I'm not touching it, man. I'm staying away from that one.
I agree with that because, listen, that's the thing. People want to move up. People want to move – usually with the first round, you're moving up in the first round. You're not moving up from the middle of the second round to the first round. If you think they're going to go, because Simmons is not going to be there. If you're going to move up, you probably have to move into the 20s, right?
Right.
You're not moving up to 30. You're going to move from 49 to 22. That is a huge move. That is a lot of draft capital. And, like, Duke Johnson's not going to get it done. 49 and Duke Johnson isn't going to get you to the Jeffrey Simmons pick. So I'm very wary of that. Letting a guy fall to them that they can then redshirt. But the idea, I don't think they have to go all in on Jeffrey Simmons because you know what? Then just take the guy at Simmons' position in next year's draft with your first round pick. I would not want to give up everything because there is some risk with that guy, right? Injury wise and otherwise. And so I know there's a lot of talk about that, but that talk actually does make me a little nervous based on what I think the price would be.
Yeah, because I don't think they're going to bite on Duke Johnson and the poo-poo platter of here's a couple fifths and a fourth
That's
and a third and, oh, look,
you
a spare rib. Are. Wonderful. You know,
give them Duke and Greg Joseph. And we'll move up 30 spots.
Oh, what is that, a chicken wing over there? Oh, give me that chicken wing. Like, I don't think they're going to jump to that. So
I don't know, man.
It's been floating around. It's been floating around my head a little bit. I'm really intrigued by the talent. I'm intrigued by the idea of redshirting the talent, but I just don't think I want to pay the price tag. I think you've knocked it out of the park. You're right. I'm intrigued, though. It's tempting.
It is tempting, but I do, you know, there is a big thing here of they, in this world, what they're going to have to do, you know, as you build this, just like you are saving so much money on the right guard spot now with Corbett in there instead of Zeitler, and then saving money at that spot allows you to spend money elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have to do that. They're going to have to do that at linebacker. They're going to have to do that in the secondary. They're going to have to find young starters in order to do that. So they can't go all out to the extent in the draft where all of a sudden, you know, you don't have picks anymore, because then you're going to be hamstrung by not having the picks. It's going to allow you to replenish the middle of this roster. And the only way that down the line you're going to be able to work the cap to keep the young stars that you want to keep is by replenishing at a cheap price with young players the churn in the middle of this roster.
He is Doug Lamoriso, Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Thanks, buddy. This was awesome, as always.
Thanks for having me. See you.